Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we are going to be honoring grandparents. Yes, my guest, Kenneth Salzman, is a man, along with an associate, Sandy Gels Cole, who brought together a collection of stories and poems regarding grandparents that is really a charmer. Child of My Child is the title of this book, and I want to welcome Kenneth to the airwaves. Hello, Kenneth.
Hello, Donna, and thank you very much for having me.
Wonderful to have you on the show. Grandparents, my goodness. The grandparents of today, I think, play roles that are very different, yet in some ways very similar to the grandparents of the past. How is it that you and Sandy decided you were going to create this collection of poems and stories for publication? Why was it important for you to do that?
Well, I think the answer is, on the face of it, a simple one, and that is that we became grandparents, and that caused us to do a number of to think about a number of things, one of which was certainly our personal experience, which differed for Sandy and me. Sandy is my second wife. My first wife of nearly 30 years died before our only child married, became a father, and did not have that experience. So part of when Josie, our granddaughter, was born in 2009, a part of the experience for me was, in addition to the joy that comes with that, also the bittersweet knowledge that Diana hadn't lived to see that happen, and it was something that she very, very much wanted to see in her life. For Sandy, it was a different thing, as so many families are reconstituted today and step relationships come into it. Sandy was still trying to figure out her relationship with my son, and that, of course, brought to the forefront all the issues about, you know, what would her relationship with this new child be? She wanted very much to have her in her life, and she was still a little bit uncertain about what a step-grandparent is. And one of the things that we realized was that in this day and age, as you said, families take on many shapes and forms, and the challenges that lie ahead for grandparents and parents are maybe somewhat different than they were in the past. So I think there are all of the timeless joys it brings on, and at the same time, it brings on some fear and uncertainty and some an imperative to kind of rethink your own identity and your own place in the family. So we both have backgrounds as writers and editors, and it became a natural thing for us to reach out to other writers and ask them to talk in very serious and personal ways about their own experiences.
I really enjoy many of the stories and the quotes that you had in your book regarding grandparents. And there was one in here about false teeth, and I just laughed when I saw the title of this because it was written by Barbara Redfield. And it brought back such a memory I had when I was a tiny little girl of watching my grandmother in the bathroom pulling her teeth out. And my eyes must have been as big as saucers because I just thought, how does she do that? And I remember walking around. And, of course, I don't think I had very many teeth. And I kept trying to pull mine out. And I kept thinking to myself, how does she do that? I don't understand. I can't do it. And it sounds sort of corny, but we often have memories with grandparents if we're fortunate enough to be able to interact with them. And that one is my most vivid. And when I came across this article by Barbara, she had her grandson, who was 6 years old, who was just as fascinated by his grandma's, by Barbara's false teeth. That was just adorable. When she wrote that story and she decided to submit it to you, was she concerned about how it would be received? How did you get to know Barbara?
Well, we never actually got to know her or a number of the contributors. We issued a call for submissions through some of the standard publishing magazines that writers rely on. And although it turns out she lives not terribly far from us in the Catskills, she was not somebody we knew. Her professionally, I believe she's a therapist. And, you know, and as well as a writer, and had a very different sort of experience. And she was important, too, in another way. She's among there. When we set out to do this, we asked for people to write about the experience of being or becoming a grandparent. And Barbara and a number of other writers sort of they gave us pieces that dealt with looking back on their own grandparents and or, you know, being a grandparent and in kind of in the flow of the generations. And that reminded us, I think, that the line runs two ways. So we tried to really look at the experience from a number of different perspectives.
And I think her story about her work, which is included, it's not a long story. None of the items that you have in the book are real long, and that makes it very pleasant reading. And I think it makes a wonderful, wonderful gift to someone. You have a quote in here that says, "Just when I thought I was too old to fall in love again, I became a grandparent." And
yeah.
I think that many people would relate to that. There is a very special feeling regarding what you do there. But I know with Barbara, her grandson even went so far, he wanted her to do the same trick she did at home. He wanted them to do wanted her to do it at school. And the school nurse said, "No, I don't. I think it'd be traumatic for other kids." And I thought, good grief, what have we come to anymore? It's really interesting,
yeah.
But that's okay. Grandma didn't need to go through that kind of an embarrassment. There was a poem written by Ada Jill Schneider that
yes.
I really liked, and I'm going to read it. She said, "This is the needle great-grandma held to sew the buttons on the white silk blouse grandma wore without asking first, that still has the stain that wouldn't wash out from the chocolate bar that grandma ate at the Paramount Theater with her date while wearing the blouse that wasn't hers. And these are the spools of colorful thread great-grandma kept in her sewing chest with remnants of garments and safety pins and a jumble of rickrack she bought to trim grandma's wartime sailor dress and ruffles that edged our kitchen shelves." And the poem goes on about quilts, and it's, again, it's not a long poem, but she put together something in this poem that I thought was quite significant, and that is many times when our grandparents will leave us things. And I have a quilt that my grandmother gave me when she was 92 years old. And I looked at it, and if I were to see it in a store, I probably wouldn't have even ever purchased it because her tastes and mine were very different. Yet I treasure it because it is something that she put together herself, and it's one item that I have from her that's very, very meaningful. And I know many people that feel the same way. When Ada wrote this, it obviously was sharing the feeling that she had about cherishing the items that are left behind and the stories that are associated with them. A stained blouse, the story of the Paramount Theater. Did you find many of the people who submitted things wanted to express that kind of memory?
There certainly were some, and Ada did it beautifully, I think. I love the her closing lines about these are the quilts hand-stitched and stacked, pieced with the fabric of great-grandma's past. You know, I think that's just a beautiful image. There were others, too, and some of them did it a bit mournfully. There's a poem by a wonderful poet who taught for many, many years at Emory University in Atlanta, a man named Larry Rubin, whose work is found in everything from the New Yorker to the Norton Anthology of Literature and everywhere else. And he wrote a poem called The Grandparents, remembering his grandparents and maybe a bit of what he failed to learn from them and failed to value about them. And his poem concludes, maybe I can't make this work because the references are to earlier lines, but she says, "Now all her nickels rattle in my bones and his parchments split in the cold room. And God, I try, but I cannot read those buried words." So there's a sense of loss in some of the poems, a sense of holding fast to memory and to the artifacts of memory, as you're talking about. There's a piece, one of my own pieces in the book is written in the voice of my late wife to our grandchild, whom she never met. And it too tells the story of a quilt that had been passed down through seven generations of her family and is now the property of 2-year-old Josephine. So that does recur a lot, I think, that sort of grappling with and grasping for the connections from generation to generation.
I think genealogy is fascinating. When we, in our busy world today, have an opportunity to find out about our heritage, whatever it might be, some people have had real close relations with their family members and others don't. We live in a very mobile world anymore where grandparents can be in Timbuktu and grandchildren can be on the other side of the world. So you have these environments that are so different. It wasn't all that long ago and people were maybe at most 25 miles apart. They didn't have the convenience of being able to travel worldwide as we do today. And there is a sense of awareness, I think, when we can link in with something from the past relative to family members, because it often helps to explain a little bit about who we are and where we've come from. There is a delightful story about Granny. It's called Word Falls by Perse Murray. And
yes,
it's the fact that Granny is dying. Grandma isn't going to be around. And Perse wrote this so beautifully. She said, "Granny is leaving us, pet. Why? Because that's the way it is, love. Why? Because all life must end. Why? But you will see her again. My 5-year-old mind asking whys." And she goes on. She talks about how Granny read to her of the cockatoo from Timbuktu, of villains from Camillus, of the yak from Iraq. And she makes those relationships with her words, and they're so eloquently stated. And that's really what makes it so precious, those memories that you can pass along and you can share.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I love the ending of that poem as well, when it talks about the look of words on her lips as she drenches me in her word spills. And reading my eyes as I read hers, understanding forever the whys of those who love and the what I am from what I lost. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm. She's just an exquisite writer. Grandparents have often changed into roles of caretakers in today's world. Life is not always a pretty experience, and there are many grandparents that I have known through the years as a counselor who have found themselves in the role of being parent again when they hadn't planned on that. Years ago, on farms, which most of the population of the United States lived on, that was a role that they did, because mom and dad usually were out in the fields working. The kids, as they got old enough, then they would join the parents in the field. But it was a very agrarian society. Today, we have a shift where the grandparents often, again, are the custodians of the children. And those children may never get to know their moms or their dads because there's been various challenges and problems. When you were reviewing these stories, were there any that addressed this sense of frustration sometimes that those people that would be classified as grandparents, finding them playing the role of a parent? Did you have anyone coming up with something like that?
Oh, absolutely. And that was actually something we wanted to be very careful to include those voices in the anthology, because so much of what's written about grandparenthood, I think, it's reduced to cliche and sometimes, you know, greeting card verse even. And we wanted to reflect the fact that people have all different experiences, and some of them are painful. And there's one poem in here in which the poet writes of only learning that she was a grandmother when her grandchild was already 10 years old. There's one, a wonderful piece by a man named Lewis Gardner about walking a grandchild to the school bus, having assumed that caretaker role, and then coming to the point in life where the little girl no longer wants her grandfather walking her to the bus. And both the, you know, what he began thinking was the burden of caregiving, and the sadness he felt at the separation from that role in later years. So, yes, I think there's a wide range of experience. I believe there are something like 70 million grandparents in the United States today, and obviously that number's accelerating as my baby boom generation ages into the role. And I think the experience is widely varied. Some people are dealing, and again, this is reflected in the book, with such things as children, their children having babies when they're not in a good position to deal with it, either because of addiction problems or financial problems or the many things that we see in this society around us. And, you know, it's not always the case that it's an easy, idyllic sort of transition to the role of grandparenthood. Sometimes significant demands are placed on people to be caregivers and to step up and take care of a child when they thought that they were past that phase in life. So I think you're absolutely right. It's a widely varied experience. And at the core, I think most people value it tremendously, but it comes sometimes with pain.
Kenneth, when you and Sandy were deciding to work on this book, what was the effect on the two of you as you were compiling these stories? How did you choose? What was the most significant effect by doing this grouping of stories by people from all over the country?
What an interesting question. I think it created an opportunity and, to some extent, an imperative talk a lot about the roles of grandparents, to really delve down into what our feelings were in grandparents, and in Sandy's case, that whole step relationship, and she writes about that in the book. And I think that it also, some of these issues we expected to come up, we knew that a great many grandparents are resuming their caregiver roles for a new generation of children. But some of them surprised us, too. There are issues raised in the book that we just didn't anticipate. The the woman who learned she was grandparent when the child was 10 was certainly one of those. And I think that it was a fascinating process. We received hundreds of submissions and could have included so many more. There was so much wonderful work. I think we have 3 continents represented and most of the, you know, certainly every region of the country, and many of the states. And it was just fascinating to see. There was also an interesting, I think, a generational divide still between older grandparents and baby boomers. They were speaking in different terms and looking at the life passage in different ways. I think it was a more comfortable passage for people who were pre-baby boom. And I think many baby boomers are in trouble with aging. They are having trouble with even identifying, selecting a name for themselves. They don't want to be called grandpa or grandma or any of those traditional things. And a lot of creative names are being devised to address that. And I think it's an effort to hold on to youth, which is the currency of the baby boom generation, I think.
Well, we're all living so much longer. And
yes,
when you look back at history, when I look back at pictures of my grandmother, and she lived to be 92, and I thought, my Lord, she looked like she was an antique when she was 30.
Yes.
And I'm just astonished. But she survived typhoid. She lived on a farm. I mean, life was really, really hard. So today, you have grandmas that are in their 60s, and they look like they're in their 50s or 40s if they've taken care of themselves. And they're not out there hacking a dirt in the ground with a hoe like my grandmother did back in Virginia when she was growing up. I mean, she was born
beautiful
in 1900.
By a man named Clinton Campbell, who wrote, and this was based in a true incident. He wrote a poem and a letter for his granddaughter upon her birth. And he wrote it as if she would receive when she came of age, and that he would no longer be around to tell her these things he was passing on to her. And it's just beautifully rendered. And it turns out that he is thankfully still with us, and the granddaughter, Jessica, is now, I believe, 18 years old. And, it's just so nice to see him speak to her in these ways and do so without imagining that he would have this long-term continuing relationship with her. But that does speak to the increased longevity, the increased quality of many people.
In fact, I'd like to share it because I think it is very special, and it's something for any of us. If we want to leave something for members of our families, that special letter, I recommended that to a client of mine just recently because there was a challenge in communication. But I'd like to share it because I think what he said was just wonderful. You have to remember that this is Clinton's letter, and this was for his granddaughter, Jessica, especially if he should pass away. And this is what he wrote. The gods say a single butterfly fluttering its wings mid-Atlantic will cause a Pacific monsoon. Jessica, you are that butterfly. 2 days old, cocooned in pink, already the aerial of our family. As you leave the hospital, I fumble with the mail, find my first old age check. It's a reminder I want to write this letter and tell you a little about us, your grandparents, in case our time together may be far too short. I drink my coffee black, an old habit from my army days. I do the wash. Bubby irons. The windows are up for grabs. We wear the same size pants, and if I find one missing, I know it's in her closet. We cheat at pinochle. If I see her touch her ring, she's strong in diamonds, or taps the table. Then it's clubs. I probably won't be at your wedding or meet your first boyfriend. I know I'd like him. I know your father won't. Fathers are like that. Years now, from now, Jessica, when I'm looking down from heaven and see a graceful butterfly causing chaos in the cosmos, I'll rejoice and proclaim, flutter those wings, Jessica, flutter those wings. That is so delightful.
Isn't it lovely? It's such a beautiful poem.
What
and
a gift.
I love the fact that it's done with humor and such warmth and humanity.
Especially telling about it, the fact that he and his wife wear the same size pants. I think if I were his wife and saw that letter, I'd have a word with him.
Your father won't like him.
No, it's just, there's so much delightful exchange of reflection, thoughtfulness. In today's world, there are more parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, and even great-great-grandparents. And that is almost unheard of. I know in our family, that was the case for a period of years. And to have that many generations alive is just phenomenal, especially when you think there was a period that most people didn't live past the age of 35 to 45.
Mm-hmm.
So we have these wonderful, wonderful things that can be shared, and every generation has just, it seems like things have sped up. And like we've discussed, grandparents today are much different than they were in the early 1900s, 1800s, 1940s, 50s, 60s, things have just evolved in such an amazing way. And yet, for all of that change, there's a lot of things that are still the same. And that is the love of a child and being able to share your stories with that child if the opportunity is there.
And I think children who are fortunate enough to grow up with their grandparents really present in their lives gain an incredible experience. I think that there's so much to be said for children bonding with adults who are not their parents, who have such deep and abiding love for them and have their interest at heart. I think it broadens children in a way that no other experience can.
I agree. And I think, too, that there is that awareness of different time zones. And it's very, very special. And whether it's, you know, with grandparents, we're focusing on them, but many times when you are able to be around, when you're young and you're able to be around an older generation, and you listen to their stories, you sort of go into a time warp, and you go, wow, things were that way when you were growing up. And you say, yes, and this is what I had to do, and this is what worked and what didn't work. And I think that that was something that I cherished with my grandmother when I found out some of the experiences that she had gone through growing up on a farm in areas of Virginia where your closest neighbor might be 15, 20 miles away from you, and there wasn't a 7-Eleven every 5 miles, and there wasn't a McDonald's, a Burger King, none of the restaurants like we know of today. People lived in an entirely different world. And whenever I get stressed, I always think of that and go, boy, am I grateful for what I've got today. Thank you very much. I'll keep my dishwasher. I don't want to be having to go out to the pump out in the yard and pump out cold water and then have to bring it in and boil my clothes. No, thank you. I really appreciate what I've got, but I also appreciate what they went through. It really is important, I think, for different generations to share. I really, really feel that it gives us a sense of appreciation, at least if we're wise enough to recognize it.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think that although it's easy to lose sight of it, I think that growing up today is so vastly different from when I grew up. You know, certainly technologically so, but in so many ways, I think that the experience is very, very different, and I think it's easy for those of us living it to lose sight of it. But in a sense, I think my childhood must seem as primitive to youngsters today as farm life did to me when I was growing up.
I agree. I know we're out of time, Ken. The website, if you're listening and you would like to gift someone in your life with this beautiful book, it's called childofmychild.biz. That's B-I-Z. That's their website, Child of My Child. It's poems and stories for grandparents, but actually it's something that could be shared with just about anyone. It would make a wonderful gift, and it's something that I think shares a lot of heart and feeling on the part of men and women both, who are leaving a legacy of their own, perhaps for another generation to read. Ken, thank you very much for being my guest. Kenneth Salzman has been my guest today. He is the author, along with Sandy Gelf Cole, Child of My Child. Check out their website, childofmychild.biz. This is Donna Siebel. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Thank you, Kenneth.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Siebel publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number, if you would like to call in and chat with me, is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Now, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Riza Mirza. Now, Riz is a channeler and has been channeling Red Eagle. And this is a publication that's based on that. For those of you that have been fans of Seth and of any other persons that are channelers, I think you're going to be enjoying this. This is something that's very nice. And on Friday, we're going to be talking about the entrepreneur equation. Carol Roth is my guest. And this is such an outstanding book, because if you're interested in being your own boss, this is really going to give you what you need. It is really going to give you the steps on how to go about it, how to evaluate things, so that you can come out a winner. And I think that this is really very, very well done. So we've got two dynamic lineups. Oh, don't forget, have a pad of paper and a pen handy, because I've got a recipe for an Oreo brownie. Don't you just love it when I give you these recipes? Because you can just say, it has no calories in it whatsoever. This is an easy one, and it is yummy. I was going to give it to you yesterday, but I didn't have the opportunity. We ran out of time, so I want you to know I'm going to be giving it to you today. day. My feeling is that when it comes to chocolate, you can't go wrong. And when you use the real stuff, yes, you got it made and it's going to make your day. Because we were talking about grandparents, I came across something by Captain Edward Rickenbacker. Now, he was a hero in World War II, and he made this statement. He said, if a thing is old, it is a sign that it was fit to live. Old families, old customs, old styles survive because they are fit to survive. The guarantee of continuity is quality. Submerge the good in a flood of the new, and the good will come back to join the good, which the new brings with it. Old-fashioned hospitality, old-fashioned politeness, old-fashioned honor in business had qualities of survival. These will come back. If you study history, you'll find that every generation is battling problems. There isn't a one that has gone through singing in the rain, saying, woohoo, nothing's gone wrong with us. Isn't this wonderful? No. Every generation has its challenges, just like we're experiencing challenges today. So one of the things to do, especially if you are feeling like you're so locked in and locked down and you don't have any options, is to maybe talk to someone who has been around the block of experience, an older individual. Now, you don't want to get some crotchety old poophead that's not going to have very much to say but a bunch of whole negative stuff. No, you want someone that's really going to be able to give you some insights and perspectives that you can apply to everyday life. And I think it's so important, especially for a younger generation, to realize that they're not alone. Many times, older generations who were raised during a time frame when you were to be seen and not heard, and it was suffer, and that's just the way it is. You've just got to bite the bullet and suffer and just go through the hell of hells of whatever that experience might be, and gee, that's just the way it is. Fortunately, we don't have to have that attitude today. But you may have to ask yourself who you would be most comfortable with, who you would want to discuss your issues with, not because you're not capable of making a decision and making right choices, but you'd like to know what your options are. A young person doesn't really know what their options are. A person who is mature and wise and well-experienced can show them their options. And in exchange, the younger person can demonstrate that they can take the wisdom of someone who's older and morph it into that which they can use in everyday life. Someone once said to me a while back, many years back, common sense is not common, and that is for every generation. We all have our fantasies, we all have our experiences, and sometimes it is tough to recognize that life has a way of repeating lessons over and over and over again. And it may come in a different costume, but the basics are right there. So don't be afraid to ask for help. And I agree. Old-fashioned courtesy, it is not old-fashioned. Honor, trust, respect, it is not old-fashioned. These things and more are meant to be lived. The standard of excellence is meant to be demonstrated. And that is what we are about. We come into this world to be able to demonstrate the best of who we are. And that takes work. Sorry, I don't know any shortcuts. It does take work. So remember, sometimes things that are considered old-fashioned are not old-fashioned at all. And one of the reasons we cherish them is because they do have good value. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. The telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. Well, I came across a couple of things regarding weddings, and I just had to share it with you today because I thought it was a hoot. This one is about a wedding fraud. In Japan, a man and woman were sent to prison, now this happened in 2006, for falsely claiming, the husband claimed, that he was of royal descent and for staging a lavish wedding to collect gift money from unsuspecting guests. They apparently swindled over $25,000 in gift money from 61 guests, and they had had a reception earlier, prior to this lavish wedding that was planned. The cons are out there, oh yes. But how about this? There was a bride who was scorned. She had to cancel her wedding, which was in the fall of 2006. She turned the reception into a charity event. Her fiancé, she learned, at the last minute, that had been cheating on her, so she decided she was going to salvage something positive from being so terribly disappointed. She invited 125 women and made the reception at a particular lake in Vermont a charity event. Resourceful problem solving, wouldn't you say? life is an interesting experience. Okay, have you got that pad of paper handy and pen? Are you a fan of chocolate? Do you like Oreos? They are the number one cookie, I think, and I can tell why. I mean, my goodness, they are just delicious. Well, this is a brownie that you can make with Oreos. And I just think it is super. Now, you're going to need a 10-inch square baking pan. And you want to be sure that you line it with aluminum foil, and you want to lightly oil the foil. And this makes it easy for cleanup and also to lift the brownie out of the pan so that it will cool. And you're going to need to preheat your oven to 325 degrees. Now, here are the ingredients. You're going to need 5 ounces of unsweetened chocolate, 5 ounces of unsweetened chocolate, a half a cup of unsalted butter, and it needs to be at room temperature, or if your room is a little bit cool, like it's been up here in the Pacific Northwest, maybe stick it in the microwave for like 5 seconds, maybe three. 1 1/4 cups of sugar, 1 1/4 cups of sugar. You're going to need 3 large eggs, room temperature. The eggs need to be at room temperature. 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 2 teaspoons of vanilla extract, 1/2 cup of all-purpose flour, and you're going to need a pinch of salt, and then 12 Oreo cookies, and you just want to put them in a plastic bag and take a mallet or a rolling pin to them and coarsely crumble them up. Okay, so this is what you do with the ingredients. You want to place your 5 ounces of unsweetened chocolate in a double boiler, and over simmering water, you want to allow that chocolate to melt. It's going to take about 3 minutes. You don't want your water bubbling when you're having the chocolate melt in the double boiler. You just want it so that the water is simmering. Then you take your electric mixer and you put your butter and sugar in a large bowl and you beat it until it's light and fluffy. And don't make a mistake like I did. I used butter and it wasn't softened enough. The room was cool, so it came out sort of like in chunks, and no matter how much I beat that sugar and butter, it just didn't get light and fluffy the way I wanted it to. So remember, the butter does need to be softened. Anyway, it's going to take about 2 minutes to beat that, and then you want to add your eggs one at a time, and you want to beat the mixture well after each addition. When all of the eggs have been beaten in, then you want to mix in your melted chocolate and your vanilla. And then you're going to add your flour and salt and mix on low speed until combined and smooth, and that'll take about 2 minutes. So you want to, with a spatula, a big spatula, you want to go and fold in your crumbled Oreo cookies. And then you put your batter into your prepared pan and make sure it's an even layer. Use your rubber spatula to level it out, and you bake it until a tester comes out of the middle of it where it's clean. It's going to be anywhere, depending on your oven, 35 to 45 minutes. And then that is 9 servings. Trust me, they're going to want more than what you give them. Really good. And if you serve it warm with French vanilla ice cream, I mean, this is really good stuff. I really like it. Am I a chocolate person? A little bit, yes. And don't forget, the 17th is National Ice Cream Day. Yes, so on that day, there's absolutely no calories in any ice cream that you eat. Absolutely none, sherbet, gelatos, whatever it is that you're going to have, no calories. National Ice Cream Day, July the 17th. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break when we come back. Give me a call if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. We'll be right back.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. Telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. All I need is your first name or initial. Oh, I almost forgot. I have got special events coming up, and you need to know about them, and that is especially if you're in Western Washington listening to the show today. I'm going to be doing a mini class here in Lakewood, Washington at the Progressive Spiritual Center, and that's at 6108 Mount Tacoma Drive, southwest in Lakewood. It's going to be, again, July 26th. The time is 6:30 in the evening. There's a small fee of $10. This is going to be very relaxing, laid back, interactive, and if you really want to become more aware of your own intuitive skills, I invite you to come along. And again, you can contact or get the information off of my newsletter because I have everything posted there as well as on my website. So go to DelphiInternational.com and you'll get all of the information there. Now, on the 30th of July, we have a very special event, and that is put on by the Ascension Foundation. It's titled Answers, and it's a two-part activity level on Saturday the 30th. In the morning from 10 o'clock until 4:30 in the afternoon. This is open to the public. There's going to be all kinds of vendors and healers. I'm going to be there. I'll have a booth. I'll be doing many sessions with people, as well as having a whole bunch of books and some special embroidered angels. Then in the evening, I am going to be a featured speaker along with some other individuals, and we are going to not only be giving demonstrations, but also chatting with whoever comes. It's a very special event. It's from 6 in the evening until 10 o'clock, and the fee for that is $35. That's going to be at the Best Western Plus at the River's Edge in Tukwila, Seattle. And you can go to my website. You'll find all of the information. You can also check out the AscensionFoundation.com, and if you want to give them a call, it's 206-356-6356. And then I still have 8 tickets left for the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. Now, this is coming up in October, and in the first 3 weekends, absolutely awesome as an event, and I want you to know that I have 8 family passes left out of 20. So if you would like to get one, if you'd like to come out to Buckley, Washington, bring your family. This is for 2 adults. It's a $45 value, this free pass. Come on, give me a call or send me an email. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Or give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604. Don't forget, I need your contact information so I can mail the ticket for you in time for the event. They are going very quickly. I wanted to share something with you when it comes to looking for a job, there's so many different tips that we can be aware of. And I think that one of the biggest things when we're going out to look for work is to remember you never have a second chance to make a first impression. And it really is amazing how many times people will go out for job interviews. They're poorly dressed. They have rings through their nose or whatever else. They're wearing clothing that bears the midriff. And it really is amazing how they're not aware of the presentation. And it's something that lots of times, if you have not been in an environment that shows you the value of that, you don't realize that that's what you have to pay attention to. And one of the things that was brought to my attention, and this was something that an individual wrote about, and his name is Tiger Todd, he said, people don't realize their faces really make a difference. Most of our communication clues and messages come not through the spoken word or the written word, but through the tone of our voice and our faces. And that is so true. When I was working, this is a few years back, for Frito-Lay, and I had a wonderful supervisor. Her name was Audrey, and I was a receptionist at the time. And I just loved my job. But I was going through a very, very difficult time in my life. And this is a personal story I'm sharing with you because it taught me a very valuable lesson, and maybe it'll help you. Audrey was very pleased with my work. I got nothing but A+ whenever it came to job reviews. One afternoon, however, she called me into her office, and this was after I was finished. She said, Donna, we need to have a talk. Well, her tone of voice made me very uncomfortable, and I knew something was wrong. Couldn't figure out what it was, and my mind was just buzzing. What was going on? What was happening? What did I do wrong? Gee whiz, have you ever been in that kind of a situation? Well, then if you have, you understand what I was going through. Now, what she said stunned me. She said, Donna, you're the finest person we've ever had at the front desk and working with the public. We just absolutely love you. But I'm getting calls from customers. They are worried about you. And I really was stunned. The customers were worried about me. She said, I know you're going through some challenges in your life. And I was. I was going through a very, very bad divorce. And she said, I don't want to know what's happening in your life, but I want you to know something. I want you to keep your voice up here. And she raised her hand, placing it above her head. She said, when you're talking to people, you're not aware of it, but your voice is way down here. And she lowered her hand down to her stomach area. She said, your attitude is showing. We can't have it. You are the face of this company. Your voice is the face that they identify with. And it's wonderful. We love it. So I want you to keep your voice up, not down. I was stunned. I had no idea that my voice was reflecting my mood, my concerns, my stress. After that, there was never another complaint. But she made me aware of the fact that how we express ourselves makes a difference. When we're in front of people, if we have a frown, if we're tired, stop and think of people you've looked at. I encountered a friend just the other day that was so exhausted and so stressed. It was easy to read their face. But when you're out looking for a job, when you're out in an environment, it is putting the best face foot forward, you might say. If you say one thing and your face is expressing something else, it makes a difference. So be aware. You need to be alert to how you reflect. You want to be sort of like an actor or an actress, and you want to reflect the best of yourself with a face and an attitude and a tone of voice that is going to make people want to have you in their environment. It makes a difference. This is Donna Sebo. We're out of time here. Remember always, You're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Put the best face you've got on and let it shine in front of the world that really wants to see the best of what you have to offer. This is Donna Siebel. We'll talk to you tomorrow right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.